Ellie, you have literally devoted your life to preserving the memory of those who perished during the Holocaust. But you don't just dwell upon the past, but you specifically focus on the future, which is the youth. This mission is closely related to Poland, with which you have very close contacts. Can you talk about this relationship?
Yes, and thank you for inviting me to be on this program and for all the good work you've been doing for many years in terms of your work for Poland and for improving Polish-Jewish relations. When I started off my journey in Holocaust education, I really didn't have any preconceived notions about Poland. And so I didn't come with any of the prejudices that sometimes my fellow Jewish participants in the March looting might have had. Some of them did, some of them didn't. And, you know, throughout our life's journeys, we learn different things. And one of the things you learn to do is whenever you hear an assumption, to question it and to check it out and to find out what is the real true story. And since the beginning of the March of the Living, myself, along with the March of the Living, has really transformed from a unidimensional program, which was solely to focus on the Holocaust, just to study the Holocaust, and it's broadened in a number of important areas. The first important area it's broadened is to understand what the Polish people went through, that while the Jewish people suffered a tremendous, tremendous loss during the Holocaust, the Poles suffered tremendously as well. And to appreciate their sacrifice and their history. That was the first revelation that began to happen in the early 90s or mid-90s. The second thing that we began to do is also understand the complexity of Polish-Jewish relations, both the beauty and the remarkable civilization that centuries of Jewish life in Poland was able to flourish because of the welcoming fertile ground that Poland presented to the Jews, but also the difficult parts of that relationship, and to look at both sides with an objective and fair-minded eye. And the third evolution that happened was to also appreciate the tremendous thousand years of Polish-Jewish history that preceded the Holocaust, that again, at the beginning of the March Living, was really not in the consciousness of the minds of the people who organized the program. And it's been a wonderful journey. Subsequent to all of those changes, we also decided the following, that whatever conclusion you come to about the history of Polish-Jewish relations, because it's a complicated subject, and some people will fall on one side and some people fall on the other side, there is no excuse for not building bridges today. And no matter what extent you think there was anti-Semitism in Poland before and during and after the Holocaust, and we can debate that for hours, that's no excuse for us not building bridges today. And we have had so many experiences year after year after year where people in Poland have reached out their hands to the Jewish community, and when we respond, it's something wonderful to behold.
Practically speaking, how has the program changed? That it serves the purpose of bringing Poles and Jews together?
Well, I think the first thing is that we really advocate strongly for the meeting of Polish and Jewish youth together, that we understand that you cannot hate somebody if you know their story. And we also see that among the young people, within minutes, as soon as you put young Polish teens and young Canadian Jewish teens from Canada together in a room, or teens from any background, all of a sudden they're talking, they're having a good time, they're laughing, they're singing songs to each other. They automatically start to click with each other. And that's the first thing, Polish-Jewish dialogue. I can never forget this. I remember a young girl from Montreal, probably in her early 20s from university, from McGill, standing up after a session of Polish-Jewish interaction. She said, "I came to Poland wanting to hate you, but after meeting you, I can no longer do that." Like, just that alone, that one moment alone is worth, you know, hundreds and hundreds of Polish-Jewish dialogue sessions. The second thing that we do is we have all our groups meet with Polish bridges among the nations, to meet them in person. And what's so interesting is that a fraction of people in the world have met Holocaust survivors. Much less people have met Polish righteous among the nations. In Canada today, there are thousands of Holocaust survivors. In Canada today, there's only one righteous Pole among the nations that's left alive. And you and I know that because we interviewed him, Franciszek Pawlowski, amazing, amazing human being. And so when these young students meet Polish righteous among the nations, first of all, this is likely the first and last time that's going to happen. But secondly, in front of their eyes, they see somebody who risk their lives often to save total strangers. And the look of appreciation and love and gratitude on the faces of these young people, where they're meeting a hero. They're meeting somebody who was in such stark contrast to everything they've been seeing, the death camps and the piles of shoes and the ashes and the air and the killing fields. It opens up a whole new area of, first of all, individual appreciation, appreciating that person for who he or she was, but also understanding, wow, there are people like that in Poland who did things that I may not even be able to do. And whatever stereotypes they might have had, certainly begin to crack at that during the moment of that interaction. And the third thing I said, which isn't necessarily focused only on Polish-Jewish relations, is to take the young people to the Polin, the Museum of the History of Polish Jews, and to expose them to the 1,000 years of glorious Jewish history that existed. And it existed in Poland more so than any other country. And I'll tell you something funny, because often when I lecture on Polish-Jewish relations, I play a trick on my audience. I say, so, which country had the largest population of Jews for more years than any other country in the last 1,000 years? And of course, the country is Poland. People say yes. And I say, that's because, you know what that is? That's because Poland was the most anti-Semitic country in the world, right? And there's a pause. What? What did he just say? Because they've heard that sometimes, that Poland is the most anti-Semitic country. And then I just juxtapose it with the fact that this is where most Jews lived and flourished for. And all of a sudden, there's that realization, this is a complex issue, because if it was the most anti-Semitic country, this is not where Jews would have flourished for close to 1,000 years. And that's where the dialogue and the discussion begins.
Now, in 2001, you co-created this unique program, which is called March of the Remembrance and Hope.
Yes.
How do you evaluate it, looking back at its 15 years? It's different from March of the Living. It's special.
The March of the Living is a program which has basically two branches. The first branch is Jewish identity and Zionism in Israel and connection to our Jewish past and our Jewish heritage, et cetera, et cetera. And the second branch is more universal. It is about human rights and racism and fighting intolerance against any member of society that's being discriminated against. The March of Remembrance and Hope is a program that only goes to Germany and Poland, starts off in Germany, 2 days in Germany, and 5 or 6 days in Poland. And that is not aimed at Jewish high school students. It doesn't really have a focus on Jewish identity. It's aimed at Canadian students of all backgrounds, Christian, Muslim, First Nations, Hindu, Buddhist, and yes, some Jewish students go on that as well. And the goals of that program are more universal. The reason we started that program was because, first of all, we realized that the Holocaust didn't happen just because the Jews were weak and defenseless. It happened because the rest of the world let it happen. So we must reach out to the world to teach them about the Holocaust. And secondly, we also realize that the Holocaust has universal lessons, that in the last century, it was the Jews suffering genocide. But since then, there's other minorities who suffer genocide as well. It happened in Rwanda or in Sudan or in Bosnia or in Cambodia. And what's happening today among the Yazidis. So we must take the Holocaust as a lesson, not just for what happened to the Jews, but what can happen to anybody in any part of the world at any period of time. And so that's the universal lessons of the March of Remembrance and Hope. And we have seen these students graduate from these programs and go across the world and across their communities, as I said, Muslim, First Nation, Christian, and really make wonderful changes and positive impact on society from what they've learned on these trips.
Do you think that Poles and Jews have found a path of understanding after so many years? Do you think there has been clear progress?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the historical realities that have made that happen, or at least helped that happen. I mean, I remember the first time I went to Auschwitz in 1989, I barely saw any references to Jewish suffering in Auschwitz. If it made reference to Hungarians or Slovakians, or Lithuanians or Belgium, whoever, or people from Holland, didn't make the reference to the fact that they came there because they were Jewish. Of course, in 1989, Poland was still communist. But since then, Auschwitz alone, remarkable developments in the concentration camp memorial, where everywhere you go, all the signs are, of course, in Polish and English and Hebrew. And the camp, of course, memorializes the Jewish suffering. But it's not just in Auschwitz-Birkenau. I've seen so many incredibly moving and touching Jewish memorials throughout Poland. And this is a testament to me what the true Poland is like. When communism fell and Poland was able to assert itself as a democracy, it chose to celebrate its Jewish heritage. It chose to welcome Jewish backs. It chose to forge ties with Israel. And in Europe today, Poland is one of Israel's strongest allies. So I think it's moving very much in the right direction. Is there still anti-Semitism in Poland? Absolutely. There's still anti-Semitism virtually everywhere in the world. But I think there's been some dramatic changes over the last 30 years, almost 30 years. And I think the fall of communism is what propelled Poland on the path where it could assert its true identity.
What do you think needs to be done, and what do you think should be avoided by both communities to achieve what we all need, which is the mutual respect, compassion, the celebration of the good past, and reconciliation of those elements that are painful?
I think what we need to do is be honest about the past in a way that allows us to move forward. The past is a very complex terrain. We could argue about who had more or less responsibility during the Holocaust years. Could the Poles have done more, et cetera, et cetera. And I have my own views on that. But you have to start from a place of, today I want to build better relations. Today I want to make sure Poles and Jews appreciate each other today and appreciate the good things they had together in the past. Let's start from that perspective, not who's going to score points, who's going to show who did what. Let's start from that. Let's start from, we want to build a more peaceful, tolerant society for all members of the human family, and we're starting with Poles and Jews. That's number one. Number two, let's not speak in generalizations. You know, I mean, I'm sure as you read the internet, every time something, there's some Polish Jewish issue comes up, some of the comments that people make are so ill-informed and so ignorant. And they're on both sides. You know, some Jews will say all Poles collaborated with the Nazis during the Holocaust and worse than the Nazis, which is an absurd statement. And of course, some Polish people will say that, oh, the Jews collaborated with the communists and all Poles are righteous among the nations. I mean, were there Poles righteous among the nations? Of course there were. Were there Poles who collaborated? Of course there were. But that's not all of Poland. You know, most Poles neither collaborated with the Nazis or saved Jews during the Holocaust for a variety of complex reasons. But I think we have to avoid these sweeping generalizations on both sides and look at the true history of that period of time. The true history is a very difficult history because, you know, when you are when a nation like Poland is suffering its own genocide, suffering his own terrible persecution by an evil force of Nazi Germany, it's very hard to expect people like that to all of a sudden rise up and become the most noble force in the history of humanity. Start off with the goal of, we want to achieve peace and brotherly and sisterly love between us. And secondly, avoid sweeping generalizations because they're just ahistorical. They're simply not true.
You have published a book, which is called Witness, Passing the Torch of Holocaust Memory to New Generations. Which is a story of everything you have really done, right?
I encourage everyone who hasn't seen the book yet to purchase a copy, because we're doing the second edition, because the first edition is almost sold out and has done very well. The first edition has introduction written by Pope Francis, and the second edition will have another story about Pope John Paul II. There is nothing in the book about hatred or revenge or bitterness. The book is all about the courage and the eloquence of the Holocaust survivors and the young students who hear their testimony in the very places it unfolded. When a survivor says to a young person in Auschwitz-Birkenau, I don't hate, and the student says, how could you not hate what the Nazis did? And he said, because hatred poisons the one who does the hating. I hold them responsible. I don't hate because hate poisons the one who does the hating. That's a life lesson this young person learns, that no matter what happens, I'm not going to let the hatred enter my heart. That's the kind of wisdom we learn from the survivors and you find in the book. When Fagi Libin says that, I learned after the war, if I had hate in my heart, I wouldn't have room for love, so I chose love. That's a beautiful thing for a young person to learn. Those kinds of quotes appear throughout the book. And you have in the book moments when you see survivors relating to the students what it's like to be a young person during the Holocaust. There's a moment where Helena Birenbaum says she was pushed into a gas chamber in Auschwitz-Birkenau, and for whatever reason, the gas did not go on. And she thought she was going to die. And her last thought was, I'm going to go to my death, never having experienced a true love's kiss. And that, when she tells that to the students, I mean, you can see the students thinking about how precious and lucky am I to have friends and family, and to have the hope of experience that first love's true kiss. And so these young people are hearing the stories of the survivor in the very places they unfold, and that's reflected in the book. And I want to read you the last poem of the book, which reflects the ethic I'm talking about. This is a poem written by Jennifer Stauffenberg in the 1994 March of the Living, unprompted. She wasn't told to write this poem, but this is what she got from the experience. And she writes as follows: "And still I cannot hate. I see bones and hair, shoes and glasses, while in a Nazi hell ruled by the devil's brother, but still I cannot hate. I see women's brushes, men's prayer shawls, and babies' tattered clothing, but still I cannot hate. I see splintered boards where people laid their weary bodies to rest. I see where people slaved and tried to exist, and still I cannot hate. I see the death and destruction, but still I cannot hate. I won't continue this tragedy. I won't spread the disease. I won't fan the flames that hate like this inspires." So those are the beautiful words from a 17-year-old girl. You know, after experiencing, you know, the evils and the horrors of Auschwitz-Birkenau, she comes out saying that she can't hate. Certainly we can as well. And one other thing about the book I'd like to share with you is it's an interactive book. First time in Canada it's ever been done, as far as I know, where you take your smartphone and you put it over the picture of the survivor or the righteous among the nations who appear in the book, and it takes you to their testimony on the Steven Spielberg side of the March of the Living side. So, for instance, on one page, you have a beautiful picture of Sidney Zoltak being embraced by his rescuer, Sigmund Krinsky, who hid him in his barn for 14 months. And if you put your picture on Sidney Zoltak's face, you will be taken to him in Treblinka, standing next to Sigmund Krinsky's son, Stanislav Krinsky, hugging him and telling the kids, "The worst part about my experience in the Holocaust is after I got out of the barn in Semetice, nearby Semetice where he was hidden, I went back to my hometown. None of my friends were alive. They were all murdered." And he looked at the kids and said, "You want a class reunion? The only place I can have a class reunion is here, among the 17,000 stones in Treblinka, where all my friends are murdered." That's how the book comes to life. You not only read the words of the survivors and the righteous among the nations on the pages, you are taken to their stories on the Steven Spielberg website, Foundation website, or the March Fleming website, where you can get an expanded version of what they have to say and see them actually talking to the young people in the places where the stories unfolded. And that transmission of memory from survivor to young person, from righteous among the nations, Polish righteous among the nations, to the young people, I think is the central value of the March of the Living.